listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. You're in tune with WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. The WHFR Journal is next.
Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to this edition of the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw with you. So happy to have you as a part of our loyal listening audience here at WHFR. We're going to kick off our show today with the partner liaison for Concert of Colors 2025. Now, Sean Blackman is certainly no strange name to WHFR because we have played his brilliant music over the years, for many years, in fact. But this time around, we're talking with Sean as the actual partner liaison to Concert of Colors World Music Festival 2025. So you're wearing a different hat this time, Sean, and we're so happy that you are, and we're really glad to have you with us today. Welcome to the Journal.
Thank you. Thank you. And hello, Metro Detroit. All right.
Yay. We are so excited to be a media partner and a supporter, and just frankly, for many, many years, a huge fan of Concert of Colors, this amazing gem in Detroit, one of the nation's longest running, largest free global music festivals. It is a powerhouse of music festivals, music from around the world at its very best. And you've been tasked with no small task, Sean, but making sure this whole thing goes off without a hitch. And it starts next week. Tell us a little bit about your role at Concert of Colors 2025. I know you're no stranger to the event itself, certainly.
Well, I'd like to say I think I've attended every single one of them.
Well, that's the resume right there. That's all you need.
Yeah. And in the past, I volunteer weekend of, and, you know, artist relations and, you know, just help out when I can, because I'm just there, you know, every day. It's one of my favorite things to do is see live music and to have it all combined and, you know, and in one area with, you know, so much variety. My God, it's just brilliant. And this year I went on staff. Ishmael Ahmed, the founder of the festival, received money from the state, and it was able to put together quite a fabulous team this year. And so my job, maybe I should say first and foremost, you know, for those who don't know me, I am a professional musician, dedicated my life to my music, and I am also performing at the festival. So I just want to, you know, make that the priority.
Typical musician fashion, as it should be, right? Yeah. That's the calling card. Great, yeah. Great.
You know, but yes, I have a job this year, so outside of my music, and that's being the liaison between all the partners, all the participating venues. So that includes the Scarab Club, CCS, College for Creative Studies, the Science Center, Third Man Records is on board this year. Also, the DSO. We have an outdoor stage just south of Orchestra Hall, and the Detroit Historical Museum, which is where I'll be performing. And a little plug on Thursday at 5:30.
Yay. So,
and we're looking forward to also having you there as well, working on that, you know, broadcasting live too. Yeah. So fingers crossed that works out.
Well, we wouldn't miss it for the world in some fashion, in some capacity. Again, so proud to be a media partner of this this huge event. And you mentioned Ishmael Ahmed, just a wonderful community citizen, frankly. And it really is Ish's vision that Concert of Colors exists today. So those that don't know the history of this event, it has been something that he had wanted to do and was kind of doing in small capacities, and then finally sort of established it, got it together. Ish has worked with Access, New Detroit, WDET, and other entities. He is ever busy, but we really have him to thank for kicking this whole thing off, what, like 30-something, 33 years ago, I guess. And so we have grown, I think it's safe to say, and ebbed and flowed over the years, but always providing some form of free global entertainment, diversity, positivity, and just a community outreach like none other, because, you know, if you can't speak together through music, you can't speak together at all. So we love that. We love what this is founded on, including not only music from different parts of the world, but some different parts of Detroit, too. So this is a hometown festival with a global flair and great global talent. So tell us a little bit about the details. When do we officially kick off? You mentioned so many different related venues that are going to be participating. There really is something going on just about everywhere.
Totally. Well, the kickoff is Wednesday night at 8 o'clock at the Detroit Film Theater, which is inside the DIA. And that's the first performance of the festival. And it's the Niez, the Fourth Light Project, which will just be fabulous. I mean, everything's going to be fabulous. It's almost silly to toss that in. But and then after that, it's actually my band that's kicking off Thursday at the Historical Museum stage. And on the just outside the front door of the Historical Museum is a beautiful courtyard where the stage will exist. And at 5:30 p.m., put together Armenian Palestinian jazz group. Like, wow, how cool, right? So, you know, Detroit, the melting pot. We have all these great musicians from all over the world. Of course, with all the cultures here, there's musicians. and that's what's so fortunate about Concert of Colors for us, is it provides this platform for these musicians to play. We really don't have a quote unquote world music venue in Detroit for these musicians to publicly perform all year round. So this is amazing, you know, opportunity to see what's in our own backyard, right? And so Victor Ganam is the Palestinian input to the group. He plays the oud and the kanun. So if you don't know what that is, come check it out. He's virtuosic on both instruments, really powerful. And then the jazz element is the great David McMurray. Dave McMurray is a Detroit Icons jazz saxophonist. He's toured with the Rolling Stones, with the B-52s, with Bob Dylan. Wow. And yeah, he lives right here in Detroit. And when he's not touring, he, you know, will take a gig, and which he did with us, which is fantastic. He's also signed to Blue Note Records. Wow, the largest jazz label in the world. Dig that. So, and our rhythm section is bass, drums, and two Middle Eastern percussionists. So we're gonna throw down. It's going to be an exciting repertoire of music. So Thursday's stage at Historical Museum is happening throughout the evening with other groups, of course, after us. And then Third Man Records is the next element for Thursday, and where there's going to be a beautiful noise concert with really just renowned musicians that are in the avant-garde zone, and including some locals as well. So that's going to be very exciting. I'm going to race over there, and I think, and hopefully you are too, right? With WHFR.
That's the plan. Yeah, we look forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah, excellent. And that's just opening night, right? That's just the first day. And there's things going on kind of in between all of these different sort of headliners, if you will. When we talk about this event, I think what's most exciting about it is the fact that there really is something for everybody. The event primarily, aside from some of the internal ones like we just talked about, primarily festival-like, party-like stages outdoors and so on, as well as some of these indoor ones. But there is opportunity to come down and kind of spend the day during any of these days just enjoying what Detroit has to offer and what this festival has to offer. Friday, Saturday, Sunday will be the big ones. We also know that, again, there are opportunities for cooling off if it's particularly warm by going into like the DFT or some of the other local museums and things. But if you just want to bring a blanket and sit down on the lawn, the north lawn, right, of the DIA and just share music with others, like-minded people, this is the place to go. So what else should we talk about? You want to talk about Friday a little bit?
Well, sure. And I guess, you know, I mentioned the partners that I'm the liaison for. But I did leave out the bigger venues, which is the DIA and old school Shane Park, aka Aretha's amphitheater, Aretha Franklin Amphitheater. I'm not handling those two. Those are Ishmael Ahmed's. And it's so exciting that Shane Park is back on board with us. You know, Concert of Colors was there for so many years and it's beginning. And those, for all those out there that know Concert of Colors from then, know it as the golden years because it's just such Shane Park. I mean, on the river, how cool, right? Mm. So Shane Park is happening on Friday night. And there's, I mean, Mavis Staples is going to be saying, wow, how cool, you know? Also, the Lovelocks experiment, which is just going to be an exciting band. There's going to be a lot of high energy, dancing, fun, crowd participation, the whole bit. And of course, food, worldly diverse food will be available at all venues. And then Saturday, Sunday, it's front lawn of the DIA. We have two stages. The Detroit Film Theater will be happening as well. And the Scarab Club's set will be on Sunday evening. And CCS will be Sunday during the day. Science Center is happening Thursday and Friday. And we also have our stages at DSO, which will also be happening over the weekend. So it'd be a lot of moving around, but yeah, a lot of fun to be had. So,
and you know, we haven't even said anything about the kid-friendly component of this event, but and that's a whole nother thing. Let's remind our listeners today, and we thank you for listening on this Friday to the WHFR Journal. We are talking with Sean Blackman, who is this year serving as the partner liaison for the 33rd Concert of Colors World Music and Diversity Festival, taking place, kicking off Wednesday and running through next weekend. Of course, WHFR supports this event based on all the good that it is doing for this community and the community at large and on a global scale as well. Sean, this really is a family-friendly event. One of my favorite things coming to concert, we come, you know, we go down year after year. One of my favorite things, aside from the reggae music and buying myself a beautiful little reggae-type Caribbean dress every year, because it's just what I like to do, and then enjoying the food, but certainly the opportunity to see like a 2-year-old and a 102-year-old both dancing to the same music out on a lawn somewhere. And that, I think, is that whole concept of connectedness as a community. So we have some opportunities for kids, I know, related to arts and crafts and things like that. But how would you speak to that?
Well, our beautiful Angia Kai, a.k.a. Mama Angia, she used to run the Detroit Festival of Arts, which was also an amazing, globally mixed festival. She is taking over the stage on the South Lawn of the DIA. And that's the family-friendly aspect of this festival. And she has things running all day long, tents, guest speakers, fun interactive things for all the kids. So this is a great weekend to bring the entire family down. And it's the kind of thing where you could even like leave your kids in the tent safely and they will be watched over, and they will walk away having a blast. And it was really important to us, and Gia's she really pushed hard for it to make it happen, and worked her tail off to really gather some great people, everything local. Jessica Care Moore, our poet laureate of Detroit, will be there as well, and so many others, you know, working with the kids and giving them projects and hands-on. Yeah, for sure.
We have so much entertainment taking place at so many different times. We're grateful for the website, concertofcolors.com, which allows it all to be sort of compartmentalized and easy to reach and follow and figure out. I'm flying through the website here and looking at some beautiful faces and such diversity of the talent that's going to be coming out to celebrate diversity and celebrate life together here at the Concert of Colors. Jo Sarah Pear, a great friend of WHFR, she's done benefit concerts for our station, for our nonprofit as well. We love the diversity of the music, the Detroit House and Techno Tribute at the Scarab Club. You know, when we talk about what people should be prepared to bring, are credit cards okay? Do we need cash only for things? Should we bring our own lunches? Can you bring like a refillable bottle of water so we don't have to do the plastic, stuff like that? What do you think?
Well, for sure. We'll have food trucks, and I'm sure they'll have the tap or swipe machine with them. So that's fine. Cash, everybody likes cash. I'm sure everyone would prefer to be paid with that. But yeah, that's easy. And there'll be plenty of drinks available as well. So, and we're going to, I guess, maybe it'd be fun to mention what's happening on Sunday. I mean, we have our big names. Of course, the band War is going to be playing. It's their 50th anniversary as a group, so it's exciting to have them on board. And one of my personal favorites this year is Femi Kuti, the son of the great Fela Kuti, is performing at the Detroit Film Theater stage. That is just so exciting. And Mike Ellison, a Detroit icon, is putting together an Ethiopian slash Detroit band. He's building basically a bridge between Ethiopia and Detroit, and has top name musicians coming in town for that set, which will also be at the Detroit Film Theater right before Femi Kuti. So that's two things definitely not to miss. And I just received a call from Mike yesterday inviting me to perform one song with him for that, which is super, super exciting, too. So I get two performances this year.
Wow. That has to be like the penultimate when someone that you admire and
yeah,
just revere asks you to play with them. I don't know what that must feel like, but it's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, I had a smile on my face during that phone call, for sure.
It really is so much packed in just a short amount of time. This concept of kind of keeping everything that like the Wednesday to Sunday, the 16th through the 20th, doesn't mean that we have to stop appreciating this music, following this music, and you know, learning more about these different cultures and instruments and philosophies throughout our time. So I'm excited that this could be an introduction for people to just get a taste of what all this stuff is like and then continue on in their own exploration of this beautiful art and culture. And that must, as a performer, that must really be a motivation for you when you when you're on stage to make that connection with somebody, to see that light turn on, like, wow, this is really special.
For sure. For sure. There's a couple other bands that I think I'd like to highlight. So at the Scarab Club on Sunday, we put together a great trio. They're gonna be doing acid jazz with a tribute to Detroit house and techno music, which is just so cool. And it's a trio put together by Kassan Belgrave, son of the great Marcus Belgrave, Detroit iconic jazz trumpetist. And Kassan plays sax and clarinet, and he put the trio together with his buddy Alan Denard, trumpet player, Detroit jazz guy, who's also just phenomenal. These two guys are young, they're in their 20s, and they're on fire in Detroit. They're working all over the city. And they put together this trio with a DJ, with DJ Mello. So these two horn players with a DJ at the Scarab Club Sunday Eve. What? In the courtyard? How cool, right? And yeah, there'll be food and drinks to be had there. That's like a great thing. And then earlier that day, that afternoon, in the sculpture garden of CCS. So that is that kind of front lawn area that we put together a stage for Detroit-based female DJs that are all awesome. And each one is going to give their own approach to electronic, techno, and house. And we have the great grandmother. Well, I don't know if that's the right phrase or not, but she's part of the whole beginning of techno electronic, with, you know, always the names that people know of are Kevin Saunderson and Carl Craig and Richie Houghton, Derek May, right? But Stacey Hotwax was right there and making and creating, paving a new road for electronic music in the world. So she's headlining the CCS stage, and we have also DJ Jenny LaFemme, Monix. Oh my God. I'm sorry. Lady Monix, DJ Lady Monix, Taylor Monet, another young, but wow, incredible. I saw her DJing at an after party in the Bankel building. She just blew my mind. I was busy playing a game of chess with someone at 2 a.m, but just grooving to what she was laying down. And DJ Jenny LaFemme, and also DJ Osset. So that'll be a fun afternoon of just amazing beats coming out of the sculpture garden at CCS.
It's a beautiful series of venues and an opportunity. For me, there's nothing like enjoying music, whether live or recorded, outdoors. We are super thrilled about the third man component too. I know you mentioned that a little bit, but that's kind of newer, right? Kind of something to be pretty excited about. If you've never been to Third Man Records or toured, just to see, you know, look in the windows of the pressing room and everything. So many people that are committed to this cause. And when we sort of pare it all down and think about the purpose that Ish had sort of in creating this concept of coming together globally through music for a celebration of different voices.
Yeah, and it's I think our Detroit is so beautiful for that too, mm-hmm. Susan. I'm glad you said that, because, you know, you go to places and it's, they call it a small big city, right? I think that's because of all the cultures that are here. That's what makes it, that's the big part, right? And when you go to the DIA or when you go anywhere downtown Detroit, you see all walks of life. And it's so great to be in a city. So many times in my life, I thought about moving to New York, right? I'm a musician. It's like the thing to do, right? Go to San Francisco or, you know, any of the big cities. But God, everything is here. It's right here. If I need a harmonium player from India, I could find it in Farmington Hills or, you know, Like right now, while we're talking, there's probably a Bangladeshi band setting up somewhere, or Macedonian or Armenian. We're all here. It's fabulous, and and it is what makes this festival so special. Is you're that's going to be the crowd. It's going to be world mixed, and there's going to be a Bollywood group on Saturday on the North Lawn of the DAIA on the main stage. Oh, God, how cool. And they're actually going to teach give a dance lesson too. So you could, get your groove, Indian Bollywood groove on. So fun. Oh, and there's a local band that has gotten huge recognition all over Europe and North America. And it's a trio, all female group called Shadow Show. And they're just awesome. And they'll be on the on that North Lawn stage on Sunday too. And Saturday is when War is playing on that stage as well, the North Lawn stage of the DIA. So I mean that's going to be a don't miss kind of thing. I guess the whole festival is a don't miss too. I
You
should
said it
stop.
just that's it. You said it right there. And you're absolutely right. It's just so fun to talk about all this variety and your side of it, having the experience of being really familiar with a good amount of these people as well as the music that they're going to be showcasing. But for those of us that aren't as familiar, to experience new things, to be connected in this most passionate and powerful way. You have already proven to be wearing that hat successfully of partner liaison, Sean. So thank you for that. As we get ready to wrap up our discussion about this amazing 33rd Concert of Colors, is there anything that we missed that you want to pop in before we wrap up?
There is, and it's I can't believe I left this out, but Spotlight Detroit is one of our partners. So, like, how cool is that? On Saturday during the afternoon, there's a forum. Arab American National Museum has always been one of the partners for this festival, and we have concerts there as well. But this year, the Arab American Museum is doing their activities at Spotlight. And Susan, I don't know if you've ever been there, but Spotlight has a global footprint and is this great club that exists. It's kind of, I would say, just east of Eastern Market, maybe about a mile, and an incredible venue. And 7 nights a week, they have things going on there, live music, DJs. They have a record store in the venue, a bar. It's just a great place to for performances. And there's going to be keynote speakers and performances there as well. So that's important to mention too, because as one of our partners, it's just a great addition to our roster of partners. It's awesome.
Well, there's talent everywhere we look in this community. And the Don was the Detroit Review that he does every year. That's happening again, I understand, with it Saturday night. And there will be some big names as well as some names that we're going to maybe introduce for the first time. One of those big names, Mitch Ryder, the old Mitch Ryder in the Detroit Wheels. Oh my goodness. Love seeing that. As well as, Thornetta and Tasha Owens and Laith and Chris Kanis and all those other ones that those of us that are from around here know very, very well. But yeah,
Yeah,
it's really
Don
cool.
was never lets anyone down. Oh, and I guess that's something to mention too. So all shows at the Detroit Film Theater, there is a capacity in that room. And last year, there were some people turned away. They weren't happy about it. So there is on the website concertofcolors.com, there is the ability to reserve a space there. So again, reminding everyone that this entire festival is free, and that's very important to Ishmael Ahmed, by the way, that this is a free festival. So to reserve a seat doesn't cost anything. It just reserves a space in the theater for you. Whether it be a seat or a standing room, you'll get in the door. So maybe for the bigger acts like Femi Kuti, the Danwas Project, those are ones to really try to reserve a spot for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so glad you said that. That's super important. So planning ahead as best as you can. If you find yourself to be free on a particular, afternoon next weekend, pop on down anyway. But pre-planning, I think, so you don't miss your favorite, the favorite one you were looking for or hoping to experience. Love that we can do that sort of pre-reservation. All that's at concertofcolors.com. That's the website that we want to send you to for details about any of the stuff that Sean has mentioned today. 16th through 20th, it's all free, thanks in part to these amazing sponsors, to the sort of the vision of Ish, as well as artists willing to do an awful lot for very little, I'm sure. So come down, be prepared to do some shopping, some eating, some dancing, and just celebrating. That's what we got going on. So thank you so much, Sean, for your amazing insight. It's a great perspective to have. We love the fact that you're excited to participate both as a performer, but also as a coordinator, if you will, excuse me, partner liaison. I got to get it right. But we look forward to seeing you at the event and talking more as we go. So all the best to you, and thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, WHFR. Thank you, Metro Detroit.
Our pleasure.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit adoptuskids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for staying with us. And just a follow-up, WHFR will be celebrating Concert of Colors live on site this coming Thursday, the 17th of July. We will be at both Third Man Records doing some broadcasting from there and also the beautiful Detroit Historical Museum. Can't wait. And we hope to see you there. If you come down to Concert of Colors, please make sure you stop by and say hello to your friends at WHFR Radio. Next on the journal, we bring you some information about mindfulness and nature. The question is, the last time you went for a little walk around the neighborhood, did you take a few moments to drink in the natural beauty around you? Well, if you did, you're on the right track. If you didn't, keep listening. Either way, keep listening. We're going to get a public radio exchange piece called Mark Coleman on Mindfulness and Nature. This was recorded in 2019, and it's from a series called Sea Change Radio. Do enjoy the special presentation from Public Radio Exchange, and thanks for listening to WHFR Dearborn.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Even if it's just a tree on the sidewalk in your street, nature has a powerful potency. Even in its reduced form of a plant in your living room, it can evoke some of that presence and stillness and wildness and beauty that we can find in more pristine places in the wilderness.
The last time you went for a little walk around the neighborhood, did you take a few moments to drink in the natural beauty around you, even in the most unlikely of places? Like a timid squirrel, a blossoming tree, or a unique cloud formation? Or did you choose to zone out with a podcast, talk on the phone, or text someone? This week's guest on Sea Change Radio wants you to try your best next time to be more attentive of your surroundings. And who knows, it might just become a habit. We speak to author and nature mindfulness teacher Mark Coleman about his new book, From Suffering to Peace, and the steps we can take to appreciate our environment in hopes that we can become happier, kinder, and better stewards of our planet. I'm joined now by my friend Mark Coleman. Mark is an author and a nature meditation teacher. Mark, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be on your show.
So why don't you first tell our listeners what a nature meditation teacher like yourself does on a day-to-day basis? What is your mission?
Yeah, so my work and my love, my passion is integrating my meditation background training, which has been through the Buddhist tradition, mindfulness, meditation practices, and integrating that into nature, into wilderness. So I take people outside anywhere from a day to 10 days to, you know, a week out in the wilderness, and supporting people to develop a very deep, rich, sensitive, attuned awareness and relationship to the natural world. And the reason why I integrate meditation and nature is because we can go out into nature, but if our mind is elsewhere, if we're worried about our, you know, whatever it is, our kids, or we're planning our next vacation and not actually being in the present moment, then we're not really able to appreciate and receive a lot of the beauty and the bounty that comes from being in nature. So I like to integrate those two to facilitate people having a profound experience and connection with the natural world and, of course, with themselves.
And maybe you can kind of define mindfulness in its practitioner form. How is it different when we tell a child to be a little more mindful, not to burn yourself on the stove, versus the kind of mindfulness we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, they're on a continuum, so they're not separate. I mean, it's asking a kid to be mindful is asking to pay attention, and mindfulness is, in essence, paying attention, being aware both of our inner and our outer experience. But it's a particular emphasis on really cultivating self-awareness. So understanding our body, our heart, our mind, how we move in the world, noticing our reactions, noticing ways that we cause unnecessary stress and suffering for ourselves or others. And we can, of course, we all have that basic attention or awareness, and we also have tremendous habits and patterns of not being present, of spacing out, of being lost in our thoughts or consumed by the past or the future. And so mindfulness and meditation training is a way to cultivate awareness, to really be present and to understand ourselves, understand experience, life, and what really creates well-being and what creates suffering.
And your new book is called From Suffering to Peace, The True Promise of Mindfulness. What was the genesis of the project?
Yeah, so I've been teaching for about 20 years, both in traditional meditation settings, but also in every facet of the culture, education, healthcare, business, psychology, juvenile justice system. And I've seen how mindfulness has gone from being this quite obscure meditation practice to suddenly being on the front cover of Time magazine and on TV and on the Oprah Winfrey Show and
on British Airways.
And British Airways, which I was teaching a meditation series for. And like anything that gets so popularized and scaled as quickly as mindfulness has done, it inevitably gets oversimplified, commodified. And I was concerned that the depth and the breadth and the real intention for mindfulness practice, which is really a liberation practice, how to really free oneself from suffering, not just a way to pay attention, but to actually really understand the human condition, how to cultivate compassion and wisdom in the world. I felt like that was being lost. And so I wanted to write a book that spoke to the depth, but was also very accessible to anybody and everybody.
Now, I hate to fast forward to the last few chapters, but those are a little more germane to the environmental world, and I wanted to kind of dive into those a little more deeply. The last two chapters are waking up to nature as teacher and being a steward of the earth. So let's start with waking up to nature as a teacher. Maybe you can give us a glimpse into what it means to be part of your Awake in the Wild retreats. What would that entail if I were to sign up and go with you? And how do you hope that people come away from these retreats in terms of expanding their consciousness?
Right. Yeah, so we would go to a wilderness setting for a week, either a center in the wilderness or we'd be camping. And we'd be primarily in social silence, so people aren't talking. It's very quiet. There's a quality of being in solitude together in the wilderness. And the meditation component is really just working with the mind so we can really become present, pay attention. And then what I'm training people is how to cultivate sensory awareness, how to attune to nature through the senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, how to get out of our own way, how to get out of our own heads, since we're so busy thinking and worrying and planning, and actually develop very sensitive attunement to nature and to all the subtleties that are happening. And so why do we do that? One is because it's beautiful. There's a lot of joy and delight and rapture that, you know, being outside in nature and being really present, you know, it's conditioned for well-being and happiness. But also I see nature as our primary teacher. And that's very true in indigenous culture. And I feel like when we bring that awareness, that attention, we can, you know, there's so much teachings that I learned from 30 years of study in a wisdom tradition in Buddhism that I can access every day in nature. For example, you go outside and everything you look at is changing, right? We know things change intellectually, but when we're outside and we're seeing every moment, the wind, the bird song, the light, the smells, the quality of the air, the constant movement, transience, fluctuation. With that noticing change, we also notice everything is both generating and decaying. It's both coming into life and passing away. And so we can learn about death and the reality of cycles and seasons. And
we're seeing that even in a more accelerated version than our ancestors saw.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the point of that contemplation is really to prepare us for the basic truths of life. When we don't live in accordance with the reality that things change, that things pass away, then we tend to create more unnecessary suffering because we resist it, fight it, think it's a problem. And, you know, and then basic things like understanding how we're intimately connected to the web of life, that everything that we do and think and feel is interdependent with life around us. And so it opens people's hearts to a sense of connection, to a sense of wonder. And ultimately why I'm doing that work is really to have people fall in love. The motto for the work that I do is we protect what we love. And so my work is really to help people be present enough to fall very deeply in love with this beautiful earth. And in doing so, become better stewards and take better care and engage in ways that we need to protect and to steward.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author and nature meditation teacher Mark Coleman. Mark, we were talking about protecting what we love. I often think of people who become passionate about raising money for an illness or some kind of ailment that may have affected them or their loved ones. I look at it sometimes cynically. I was like, well, why didn't you work to fight MS before you had a loved one who got MS? But as I've grown older and I've realized that's just human nature. And I think what you're espousing is let's embrace that reality and connect that to what we all need to appreciate more, which is our natural surroundings.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, one of the reasons I do the work that I do is that we basically live in boxes most of the time. We live in our houses and our offices, our cars, our malls. And so, you know, and we're growing a generation of kids that are not really having much access to nature. They're in front of their screens more than they are anything else. And so I think it's essential that we kind of help wake people up, rekindle that connection, rekindle that bond, love, fascination, awe with nature, because it's sort of like as many things that are dying, that's also, that living contact is also declining. And so when we don't have any lived connection with nature, then of course, then there's, when we hear about some development, some urban sprawl, some mall going up, there's less of a visceral sense of, oh, that's actually a woodland being destroyed. That's farmland disappearing. That's a wetland being paved over. So I think it's essential that we learn to be outside more, but to do it in a contemplative way, because that's when we can actually be more impacted and more likely to be moved to respond.
And when we talk about responding, that can manifest itself in activism and vegetarianism and some other ways.
For sure. Certainly activism. You know, I was leading a retreat recently and we were sitting watching the sunrise, looking at the Sierras, and a herd of these beautiful black cows came. They were in the same meadow and just stood in front of us. We were meditating in a line and we were just staring at each other, and they were like, what are these strange humans sitting on the floor being still doing nothing? And we got to have this very intimate contact, which you don't normally with farm animals in that way. And after the retreat was ended, a couple of people said, you know, there's absolutely no way I can ever eat meat again. Just because there's the intimacy of contact. It wasn't just a nice idea of becoming vegetarian or eating a plant-based diet. It was like, oh, these are living beings that are beautiful and, you know, want to be alive and happy. So it can become activism. It can move into activism. It can be, you know, stewardship. It can be becoming vegan. It can be a whole host of different things, you know, whether it's, you know, I did a retreat in the desert, and the two men on that retreat became very active in Arizona around preserving, and we were on Navajo land and helping preserve and steward that land. And so there's a whole variety of ways, but it's when the heart's engaged that people are much more likely to actually do something. We're moved from our heart and our emotions more than our ideas and concepts.
And when it becomes more visceral and tactile and right in front of us, whether it be a loved one who's sick from an ailment or a beautiful cow staring us in the face, that moves us to connect with that, is what you mean by protecting with love. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah.
Protecting what we love, sorry.
Yeah, it motivates us, you know, and also the another dimension of that is when we're outside and feeling that connection and awe or wonder or love and the many things that we can feel outside, we also feel the corresponding grief. We were actually grieving what we love. We're grieving that which we're losing, and that also becomes very real, immediate, and also can be its own motivating force to act, right? Sometimes it's through love, sometimes it's through grief, sometimes it's also just a sense of rage and an injustice. How can we be doing this to the earth? How can we be doing this to communities of color that are mostly receiving the brunt of ecological destruction, etc.?
Speaking of these communities of color, the chapter before Waking Up to Nature as Teacher is entitled Waking Up to Unconscious Bias. We've explored unconscious bias a little bit on Sea Change Radio, but we haven't necessarily connected the dots to what that means to being better stewards of our planet. Why don't you first kind of define what unconscious bias is within the paradigm of mindfulness?
Yeah, so within that paradigm, it's really becoming awake and aware of the conditioning and the distorted perceptions and biases that we have just by being human, growing up in whatever particular culture, family, community, religious point of view. You know, we become educated or indoctrinated to certain views about people, culture, and most of that is implicit. It's unconscious, and we tend to act it out. Racism being one example of that, homophobia being one example of that. Where mindfulness can support is mindfulness is helping us wake up, becoming aware of our perceptions, conditioning, bias, and more likely to come to light if we're actually developing that kind of scrutiny of self-awareness. And so... So it's definitely one support, not the only way to look at and uncover and release unconscious bias, but it's an effective support.
Yeah, you asked some good questions at the end of the chapter. I'll read a few of them. You write, when you buy Band-Aids or bandages, do you ever think about whose skin color they're most likely to match? Or if a traffic cop pulls you over, do you ever wonder if you've been singled out because of your race? How do you feel toward a child who feels they're different gender than their own physical body? It's all about empathy, ultimately, isn't it?
Right. It's seeing our humanity, our common connection, and seeing the ways that culture, society, religion has separated and divided and actually made a social hierarchy of right and wrong, good and bad. And particularly as for myself, as a cisgendered white male, there are many ways, being part of the dominant culture, that I don't see bias because I'm swimming in a sea of dominant culture. So I'm not aware of certain privileges that I have. For example, I get to choose living in a county that's very relatively low in the pollution spectrum, right?
Marin County.
Whereas many communities, like just across the bay, like in Richmond and Alameda and other places, where more densely populated communities of color, low-income communities, don't necessarily have the choice and the luxury and the privilege to move to a place that's usually more expensive because it's greener and healthier, etc. And so this is, you know, just one of the biases we can wake up to, particularly around the privilege and that privilege affords us.
And I couldn't help but think that the way the environmental movement has struggled to be more inclusive over the last 30, 40 years of its existence, the mindfulness and yoga and Eastern religion worlds have also been largely white and middle class, even though they espouse a lot of inclusiveness. And you talk about how in the nature chapter, how there has been this idea of mindfulness being self-absorption, navel-gazing. Let's say From Suffering to Peace was, your publishers were like, you know what, this is going to be read mostly by 20 to 30-year-old people of color in the city. So how would the book maybe be a little different? For example, you say go to nature every day. I think some single mom who's working in Bayview Hunters Point in San Francisco, working two jobs with three kids, isn't going to be able to go into a park and have a nice moment at peace in nature. So how do those people find inner peace and connect to nature?
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I think I share some stories in the book of when I started meditating. I was living in East London, which at the time was quite depressed and run down. And I was living in a really poor neighborhood and not a lot of nature, very urban. And yet I was also very attuned, having grown up sort of close to the countryside, how resourcing and nourishing any access to nature was. And so for me, that practice became, okay, so I'm living in the city, living in a pretty squalid, I was squatting at the time, in this rundown part of East London. And yet I was still able to notice, okay, so there's not much nature around, but there's still sky and there's clouds and there's certainly plenty of rain and cold weather and wind and grass in the sidewalk and a few trees and a few birds in the trees. And that became part of my practice was to notice anything natural in the cityscape. You know, even if you're living, you know, downtown, wherever you are, there's still nature around. And I actually point my students to that, to notice, you know, notice the light, notice the clouds up in the sky, notice the sun. And yes, you might be working two jobs and you might be, you know, have a very stressful life. And what I find is that when we attune to anything natural, whether it's sunlight or rain or wind or any of the elements, that anything that takes us out of our human-centered world, anything that takes us out of our mind and preoccupations, it can bring a sense of space, bring a sense of perspective. And even if it's for a few moments, you're sitting at the bus stop and you're looking up at the sky rather than on your phone, or you're in your house and you're looking at the sunlight hitting the buildings across the street. I find that very supportive or very soothing, actually, and settling to the nervous system. So yes, there are many situations where there's not a lot of access to nature. But I was, you know, I even teach meditation in San Quentin Prison. You know, 6,500 inmates, pretty gruesome institution, and yet, one of the projects I was connected to is a prison garden project where they take inmates and there's a sort of horticultural program there for those incarcerated in that program. That's an amazing program of like, oh, that's true. It's a horrible place to be and something very restorative about nature. And I was back there recently and I was noticing the beautiful succulent gardens they'd planted and this bird life. And, you know,
it's an amazing view. It's one of, I remember seeing that prison. I was like, wow, that's, look at where they're located. I mean, it's almost,
it's torturous.
It's almost torturous in that sense, right?
Right. So it's partly making the best of what you've got and noticing that even wherever you are, you know, everything is ultimately nature, but there's some elements that you can attune to. And the more there is, the more you can attune and the more, even if there's just a tree on the sidewalk in your street. Nature has a powerful potency, even in its reduced form of a plant in your living room. Right? It can evoke some of that presence and stillness and wildness and beauty that we can find in more pristine places in the wilderness.
Somewhere deep inside of my soul, a natural beauty should be preserved.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author and nature meditation teacher Mark Coleman. So, Mark, here's a situation that I just encountered with my daughter, and I'm curious how a mindfulness teacher might inform what I ended up doing. We were walking down the street, and we noticed a guy in his car, like a Range Rover, with the engine on, fast asleep. My daughter and I were like, she was like, you know, he fell asleep. It's not his fault. But, you know, obviously he turned on the AC. This was a conscious decision to leave the car running. And I thought to myself, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. And then I thought, well, you know, you go by a truck stop and there's 10 trucks idling all night long. And this guy's just probably taking a 20-minute cat nap. Let it just go. And so I kept walking. So I was mindful of it. It made me stop and think for a second, but I didn't act on it. So is that mindful behavior or not?
Yeah, well, there's no strict definition of what mindful behavior is. I think the criteria is, you know, are you aware of the situation? Are you aware of, you know, both the observation, okay, here's someone in the car. We have no idea why, you know, maybe, you know, we can hypothesize all we like, and then there's our response to the situation, and then there's our reactivity, right? And usually we often let the reactivity, whether it's, you know, judgment, anger, fear, we let that drive us, and we often make unwise choices. We have a, you know, just like every city, we have a homeless crisis in our town. And often I'll go outside my house and there's at least one or two vehicles with people sleeping in them. And it's sort of becoming our particular house because we have a little area where there's no houses. So it's become a prime spot for people to know that they can sleep and not get moved on. And we don't call the police on them. And I'm presented every, you know, most days with the same situation of my mindfulness response. I can feel maybe some compassion for the fact that these people are having to sleep in cars. Sometimes there's a sense of fear around my sense of safety that can happen, and then the trash and the other stuff that can come from that. And so, you know, life is complex, situations are complex. And but if there's awareness, then we're much more likely to engage more skillfully rather than just, normally what we do is knee-jerk react. Maybe someone bangs on the car window because, say, you're polluting the air, and you know, maybe they've just had some really heartbreaking news that someone's dying in their family and they just need to pause in their car for 20 minutes before they go back into the office because they're too dysregulated. We just have no idea.
And that's a form of mindfulness too, is to be aware of what you don't know.
Right, right. And I've learned to mostly give people the benefit of the doubt. Clearly, they need to be doing that. Is it great for the environment? No. Is it what they need to do? Maybe. And they're certainly choosing that. And you know, so we're confronted every day with those kinds of challenging dilemmas. But at least having mindfulness or some awareness will probably lead to better fruit than just plain knee-jerk judgment or reaction.
Author and nature mindfulness teacher, Mark Coleman. The book is From Suffering to Peace. Mark, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for your work.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Isaac Hayes, The Beatles, and Neil Young. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.